Okay, so our workshop is with vigilance. We sought to carry the message, and Dan is going to share his experience on that.
Addict named Danny.
Hey, Danny.
Hi, everybody. So, I got clean in prison, and I believe everybody has a niche, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous, and mine was doing H&I. Because when I got clean in there was no NA meetings in that prison, so I wrote the town where H&I would come in, and I asked them to come in, and they started bringing meetings into the prison. And it was upstate Pennsylvania called Rockview, right down the street from Penn State College. And I wrote the World Service Office, and they sent me two basic texts and a starter kit. And I started that meeting in there, and these guys were coming in and out, and I got to meet all the guys, and I was like the general chair of the meeting. And I was in there for 15 months, you know, and it was like my NA meeting. I mean, it was ours, don't get me wrong. So I continued to do H&I for 35 years now. And I had a commitment before COVID down in Cape May County Prison in South Jersey. And we got shut down because of COVID. And we just got an email that they're going to be starting back up so we can do H&I. So I carry the message in the prison, you know, one day a month, so I don't go there the other 29 days a month, you know, because it keeps me vigilant when realizing that if I use drugs, I'm going to go back to jail, because that was my pattern. I would get high, I would sell everything I had, then I'd start robbing and stealing, then I'd get locked up, I'd go to jail, I'd be the model prisoner, never get in trouble in there, and I'd get released. I would stay clean, get a job, replace all the stuff I sold, and you know, that pattern happened for years. And the last time that I got locked up, I had known about Narcotics Anonymous for about 27 months, and someone had told me, if you got clean, you wouldn't be going in and out of prisons anymore. And what I learned that last time, you know, doing a bit, was that I hated prison. I hated being confined. I hated what they wanted to feed me. I hated the riffraff in there. I hated it. So I hit my knees and I said, I'm going to do whatever I got to do to stay clean. And I made a commitment with the God of my understanding. And the commitment was, if you help me stay clean in here and help me, and when I get out, help me stay clean, I'll never get high again, and I'll help addicts the rest of my life. And that's why I continue to do H&I, because I made that commitment to the God of my understanding. And at that time, to be honest with you, I didn't even like God. I was raised Catholic, and I had a punishing God, and God was always going to get me. That's what my parents said, and I was always bad, and God always got me, and I didn't have a relationship with him. I did not like God when I got here. So I was in a rehab, and this big, burly biker dude with tattoos and shit said, oh, I heard if you pray, it'll help you stay clean. I said, let's pray. We got on our hands and knees. Not to this day, I don't get on my hands and knees and pray. That's the relationship I got. But we got on our hands and knees, and we went up against the bunk bed in this dorm in a rehab. And we did this shit, you know what I mean? Because that's what I knew from going to Catholic school. And we prayed. And, you know, that started the relationship with the God of my understanding I have now. And it's a great relationship. I don't miss prayer. I pray every day, at least two, you know, three, four times a day. Depends on what's going on in my life. But I definitely pray too. You know, I ask him to help me stay clean in the morning, and I thank him at night. There's no question. And I pray for other people, man. And I don't ask God for things. I ask him to help me stay honest and vigilant in my program and clean and, you know, doing the things that I've been doing for 35 years here, you know. Keep me open-minded, keep me willing, doing his will. You know, I say the third step quote every day. And the serenity prayer is always a great, you know, because I am so powerless over everybody else, man. And I have two kids. One's clean, one's not. One's on methadone now. She switched from Suboxone to methadone. And my son's got 7.5 years clean, which is a blessing, you know. And, you know, you carry the message, and you do it with vigilance. And you know, I started meetings, and, you know, I started one meeting there, and, you know, your 50 addicts are coming there, and next thing you know, somebody else started a meeting in the same room, and another 50, and then someone else, next thing you know, because we're addicts, there's six meetings in that room, and hundreds of meetings of people are coming through that meeting a week. And there, it was up this, it was called the Brynathyn Cathedral, and there was like this winding road that went all the way down to this second mansion in the back. And so I had signs made, and I had them glow in the dark when the headlights hit them and stuff, and I spent all the money on getting them. Got out of sign business at one time, so I knew people in the sign business. And I put them out, and I made the coffee in that meeting. I made the coffee there for 5 years. I got Wawa half and half, and I got Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and I made it. And I don't even drink coffee at night. I only have one in the day, in the morning. But I made the best coffee, because if that's why you were coming to that meeting and get a good cup of coffee, I wanted to make sure you came back there. I put those signs out for 5 years. Sponsored guys through the years. And when my son called me up and said, I want to get clean, he said something so friggin' profound, I couldn't even believe it. Like a using addict came up with this. He said, Dad, I need to go to rehab. I'm like, why, what's up? He goes, well, I'm tired of getting high to go to work, and I'm tired of going to work to get high. I want to get clean. I said, when do you want to go? He said, tomorrow morning. I said, I'll be there. Me and his mother took him. When you do the service work and you carry the message with vigilance, you don't know that it's for your own kid. Well, you don't know who it's going to touch until it happens. There's an area where they live, it's called Delaware County. And his mother's clean, 38 years. And you know, being a kid, we all did it. We rebelled against our parents. We don't listen to them. But what happened was she sponsored women in Delaware County, and I sponsored guys in Philly, and they sponsored guys in Delaware County. So by being vigilant in our program and in Narcotics Anonymous, the people who we sponsored and helped in that area helped both of my kids. And that's how it works. You know, you don't know whose life you're going to touch and who is going to affect your family. So I continue to be vigilant in carrying the message. First of all, it's a family disease. So when you help somebody get clean, you're not just helping them, you're helping their whole family. And then the people in their family who know people who are using, refer them to the people, the guy that you're helping, or if you're a female and you're sponsoring somebody, and then you help them. When I got out of prison, there was no recovery houses in Philadelphia. They were up in Eagleville, Pennsylvania, which is where the first Philadelphia meeting started in June of 1969. And that guy, Dutch, he was one of the six people who went through there and started a lot of meetings on the East Coast. And so when I got out of jail, I went to this place called Brother Joe Dudek's. And he was like a pastor or something. And they were allowed to drink there. And I remember calling my PO up and I said, look, I don't want to be here. They're allowed to drink. He said, well, find a place to live. So an old girlfriend had gotten married. I was friends with the mom. And I called her up and she said, yeah, call my mom. Call Arlene. She's living there at the house by herself. So I called her up. I said, is there any way I could move into your basement? And she said, yeah. And I moved in with her in her basement. You know, When I got out of prison, I had a welfare check for $47.50. That was all the money I had in my name. And I had the NA trash bag, the the green trash bag on your shoulder. That was my NA suitcase. So after I moved out of her house, I rented a house, and there was 4 bedrooms in the house. So I thought, I'm going to open up this recovery house, and I'm going to help guys and girls, and I'm going to have a man and woman's recovery house. And everybody said, don't do it. You're all going to have sex with each other. And I'm like, no, man, I'm Danny, man. You don't know. I'm going to run it my way. And we all fucked each other, you know. And even my goddaughter was conceived there. This guy, Dave and Cheryl, actually met there and got married and had a kid, and I became Danica's godfather. So, but I ran that recovery house for 32 years, and it's been closed down like the last 3 years. And when you carry the message with vigilance and you touch people's lives, one time I was sitting on the Ocean City Bridge in Ocean City, New Jersey. There's a bridge and you could sit, like where they fish at and stuff, and the sun was going down. And my phone rang, and I didn't know who it was, and it's this guy that went through my recovery house 25 years ago. And he called me up and he's there, Danny, it's Brian, how are you? I'm like, great. He goes, I'm calling to let you know I got 25 years clean today. He's there, you and your recovery house changed my life so much. He said, you and your wife, Alice. He said, I'm married, I got kids, I got my own business, I'm clean 25 years. He said, I called to tell you thank you. And like, when you carry the message with vigilance, that's what happens 25 years down the road. You know, people call you that you touch their lives and you help change somebody's life. And listen, I do shit. I helped the guy with some food and a place to stay, and he, you know, I gave him some pointers and told him what to do, like what Narcotics Anonymous told me to do and my sponsor told me to do, and I just passed the message on, you know. And he did what he was supposed to do, and he stayed clean. You know, we still talk. I just put a roof on his house last year during the pandemic. And that's what I am. I'm a roofer. And like Al said, he knows how to stay clean like a motherfucker. Me too. And I know how to roof like a motherfucker. And that's all I need to know in life. I know how to work hard, and I know how to stay clean hard. And with that, I'm able to play hard and have a good time hard. I golfed this morning. I like golfing. I'm not that good. I'm a hack. That guy Bobby Bonds that they were talking about the last meeting, he could play some golf, that boy. He could shoot in the 70s. And I remember it was me, him, Al, and Dutch. And we played in this tournament over at McCullough's, and we won. We won because of Bobby. You know, we would all drive the ball. It was best ball. You hit the ball as far as you can, and then Bobby would take over, and, you know, we would birdie and eagle and shit. I mean, because he was so good, and we won that tournament. And the people that you meet along the road. You know, I came here to get off of drugs because I had a drug problem. I didn't want to make no friends. I didn't want to do anything that these steps told you to do. I didn't want a relationship with God. You know, I just didn't want to do drugs no more and go in and out of jails. That's why I got clean, because I hated jail. I realized that was the worst thing that you could do to me, was confine me. I hated it, man, with a passion. And now I go to jail. You know, I go in once a month. Well, I haven't been in 15 months, but I'm getting ready to go back in. I got to tell you, the guy I go in with, he's here at the convention. I golf with him. But he's actually doing another round. He's a golf addict now. He just started playing like a year ago. And I go in with him, and, you know, I get so into being in there and helping these guys. Like, we forget about time because you're not allowed to wear watches in there. And it's a 7 o'clock meeting to 8:30. One time they came in and kicked us out at 10:30 at night. And I was speaking that night. And it was just like, I mean, we stayed in prison 2 hours longer than what we had to. And I just love addicts that are in prison, man, because it's me. When I look at them, I'm looking at myself. And when I was in there, Everybody sat in front of me and on the left. It was a U like this. And it was this one dude always sitting over here. And, you know, I'm like going in like the third or fourth week, and I shared, and I don't remember what I said. I said something profound or something, because after the meeting he came up to me and he said, "Yo, my name's Ari." He said, "I really love what you say." Oh wait, he shared that day. He shared. And when he shared, he said, "I never shared here before. I've been coming to this meeting for months and I've never opened my mouth." So after the meeting he came up, he said, "I really liked what you said," and he said, "Would you sponsor me?" And I said, "Yeah." So I started I asked him, like, "How come you always sit over there by yourself?" He goes, "I don't need to tell you that." He said, "But there's a reason." So I started asking guys questions, like, "I wonder why he's sitting over there." Here, he was the deputy sheriff's son of that prison. So he asked me to sponsor him. So when you're taking H&I and you're not allowed to visit the inmates, I wrote this book called The Keys to Recovery. It was never published because I plagiarized. I stole stuff from Narcotics Anonymous, and I stole stuff from Tony Robbins, and then my own stories, and put it in this book. Now what I could have did was did references in the back, like where I got it from, but I did it without the references, and it would be so much work to go over everything and do the references to really get the book and get it printed and shit. So I never did that. But I told him about the book, and he said, "I want a copy of it." So I told him to talk to his father about getting me a visit. So the father gave me a visit. So I brought the book up to give it to him, and they said, "Oh, we can't give the book." I said, "But it's for Ari." They're like, "We can't give him the book." He said, "Let me find out from my supervisor." So he said, "Here's what we can do. We can give him a chapter. After he reads the chapter, he'll give it to us, and then you can give him another chapter." So I said, "Okay." So I went and I visited him, and I'm talking to him, and I'm not allowed to be there. And, you know, of course, I got to break the rules because we got somebody special, the sheriff's to be son. Matter of fact, he ran for sheriff and became the sheriff. The dad pulled strings. He was in there for drug dealing and robbery. And they were talking about giving him 5 to 10 years. And the dad pulled some strings and got him out while he was waiting for trial, which you got to know somebody for that to happen. So the kid came out, and I told him I would come pick him up. He didn't have a car or anything. And I went and I was picking him up, which was like a 30-minute ride. I was taking him to my home group at the hospital. CJ spoke there. I think Richie was at the hospital before. And I'm picking him up and bringing him to the meeting. And then we were doing this morning meeting over right on the beach. And out of nowhere, he goes, "Listen, everybody knows who I am." I'm like, "So what?" He goes, "But they know I'm the sheriff's son, and they're all looking at me." He said, "I can't go to those meetings." And when I said, "What? Are you out of your mind?" I said, "I'm picking you up tomorrow." So I went there, and he refused to go. He refused to go. And I'm like, "Eric, that's the craziest thing. Who gives a shit who you are, man? You got the disease of addiction like everybody else. You earned your seat, man. You got to come." He's here. "No." About 2 weeks later, he called me up and he said, "Look, remember I promised you that I was going to take you to dinner with you and your girl?" He said, "I want to do that." So I said, "Okay." He took us to Nino's down in Cape May Courthouse, which was this good restaurant where the food hung off the plates, you know what I mean? A really good place. So he took us there, me and my girl, and we had dinner, and we talked to him, and that was the last time I seen him. And he had taken me to the father's house, and the father and mother had cooked dinner. The mother was 54 years old, and at the time, she was like my age, and the father was a little older. He was like 60. And at the dinner table, I promised them that I would help their son get clean, and that I was sponsoring, and I would, you know, stay clean and do all this. And when he took us out to dinner, that was the last time that I seen him alive. He did a perk 30, which I never did because they didn't have them out when I got clean, and he ate it, and it was laced with fentanyl. He didn't even shoot it. He ate it and overdosed and died his first time. Well, he drank. That's why he was telling me that everybody knows that, you know, who he is, and that's why he didn't want to go to the meetings. And he did that pill and overdosed and died. And I went to the funeral, and I never seen so many cops in my life in one spot. I'm not sure, but I think they said there was either 1,500 or 2,000 cops there, and they came from everywhere, all different kinds of cop cars, color cop cars from all different towns and shit, and they were like, you know, like this when you walk down and you came around, and I waited in this line, man, and I got up to the parents, and I started crying, and he had his eagle, you know, his eagle's outfit on, his shirt, and the casket, and I met his significant other, the baby's mom, and his son was there. I had met them when I was sponsoring them, and I mean, what do you say? And I just said to the father and the mother, you know, I'm sorry, but I tried everything I could to help you, and I didn't really even know the guy that good, man. I mean, I know some people around here for a long time. I got friends in Narcotics Anonymous that I've been friends with for 45 years. And I got friends, you know, that are clean that I met in 83 when I first came here that I'm, you know, still friends with. And, you know, this guy passed away and it just really shook me a little bit. So I was back in the prison, carrying a message again, and there was this guy Daniel who was a state trooper, and he had got drunk. He was in the program and was clean for a while and relapsed and got drunk, and he had a fight with other state troopers because he pulled a gun on his girlfriend. So they had him for gun charges, and the state troopers had to lock up the state trooper, and he was in the jail, a state trooper. And I'm carrying the message. Now, he had been around a fellowship, and I told the story about Eric, and I started crying, you know, when I was sharing in the prison. And he came up to me and said that I touched him so much. And then he got out. And he called me up and he said, man, you know, that was so touching and you really moved me. And I want you to know that I'm back committed to Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm in a recovery house right now, and I still got trial and all that stuff, and I'm staying away from the girl that I threatened, and she's got my kid, you know, and all that stuff. But when you carry the message with vigilant and you touch people's lives, like, you know, you open people's hearts up, you open their eyes up, you touch their families, you touch their friends, you touch their relatives, and you don't know who, you know, you're going to affect. You know, and again, I just came here to get off of some drugs, man, and not go to jail. And because, you know, my sponsor and the people in Narcotics Anonymous and the people who have been here before me and the things that they taught me and the writing that I did and you know, all the writing I did on the steps. And, you know, if you dissect the steps, basically what it is it's God getting you ready with the help. God works through people, and God's working through your sponsor and other people to work with the 12 steps with you to clean your spirit out. Because when we get here, our spirits are so screwed up. And by doing the steps and everything, we're clearing our spirits out because we're full with junk. And once the spirit's cleaned out, it can be replaced with love and respect and, you know, all these good things. Peace and serenity and spirituality and all that stuff. And once you get there and you work the steps and you get to the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And when you get right, what our job here to do is to help somebody else get right. And all the steps are preparation to let you be the person that your God intended you to be, so that you can touch somebody else's life. That's all we ask you to do around here. Help yourself and help other people. And I was blessed to have the opportunity to do that. And that was, I had no desire to do any of that. Again, I just wanted to stop going to jail, and I knew stop doing drugs, I would stop going to jail. And I got to do so many things. I got to see my son get clean. I got to start meetings. I got to see people who come through my recovery house get clean and stay clean. And there's a bunch of them. I had just only told you, you know, one. And the effect that Narcotics Anonymous had on my life, I got involved in NA history. And I just love NA so much and the freedom that it has given me. And I just want to give it back to other people so that their lives can be changed and so that I could help prepare them to sponsor other men so that they could change their lives and their families' lives and their friends' lives. And those people can do the same thing and pass it on. Because we got new generations coming to NA. Us old guys, you know, with a lot of time, we're fat now, we're bald now, you know what I mean? We're getting ready for retirement, and we're doing these things, but we're still coming to NA, right? We're still carrying the message. So now we're passing on to our next generation, you know, which is our kids and our kids' kids. And so this thing is way bigger. You know, it's a worldwide fellowship. We got 70,000 meetings going on, 140 countries. We got 29 different versions of the basic text and languages. We got 55 different key tags in different languages. And it's growing and it's worldwide. And everybody has the opportunity. So the question is what are you going to do to carry the message so that you change somebody else's life? Because it's our duty now as Narcotics Anonymous members to do that. I'm staying clean today so that I can carry the message tomorrow. And that's all my due diligence. So thanks, East Coast Convention. Thanks to the committee. Thanks for everybody listening. Thanks for showing up. And I love NA. Thank you.
I'm Becky and I'm still an addict.
Hey, Becky.
So the title is With Vigilance, We Sought to Carry the Message, and Betty is going to give us her experience on that.
Thanks.
Whoa. Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Betty, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Betty.
And I'm not used to standing up when I speak, and I'm sure you can hear me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do this. I won't. I just move it a little closer. Is that better? Okay. I'm glad to be here. I thank the convention for asking me. Thank you for your message to Danny and carrying the message. So my story is a little odd, and I have those key tags in different languages. I only break these out for conventions. For those of you who weren't around 38 years ago, we gave out chips. We actually gave out chips. And these are my original chips from 38 years ago and my first year clean. And I'm just, and I'm very weepy. And I don't know. I don't have any tissue, so I'm going to use my mask unless somebody has one because I already know I'm going to cry. I've cried the whole convention. I cried last night at the main speaker. I cried when CJ was talking about his mom. I cried when my friend Pauline was talking about our friendship. Yes, of course.
There you go.
Go, girl.
She always has everything. Thank you. I don't have to use my mask. So if you ever are in the D.C. area, you'll hear a woman by the name of Doreen P., who actually went to the VA, it was called Venata program, in 1969 to get clean. And NA wasn't really there yet, and so when NA was formulated in D.C., my brother and Billy Z, who has over 40 years, and a woman named Trish and Doreen helped start Central Maryland NA. So I used to like to shoot barbiturates, which doesn't exactly make you miss congeniality. And I was a fighter, And either you were going to get a black eye or I was going to get a black eye. I know, looking at me. But remember, I got clean in 1983, and hopefully I was 28 years old, and I'm 66 now. So a lot has changed, crepey skin and all. But but my brother and I had a hate-love relationship. And every time we would end up at a party together, one of us was going to get a black eye. And so when my brother got clean and he started meetings in NA in Central Maryland in probably 1981, I wanted nothing to do about it. I knew about it, but he had the problem because he would end up in straitjackets, or he would end up, I always felt like he was a lightweight because he would always flip out on psychedelics. And so, but you know, we were all crazy in my family. And so I didn't want to go to NA because he, we would fight. We would always fight. And unfortunately for my brother, he stayed clean for about 2.5 years, helped a lot of people, and went back out, and he's been back out ever since. In my family, they you can't kill us. We're like cockroaches. We don't die. My 67-year-old sister that I've been taking care of because she has a mental illness was leaving work 6 years ago, walking in the crosswalk. A car hit her going 50 miles an hour. She went straight up in the air and through the kid's windshield. Deep ventricle bleed in her brain. Broke all of her right side, and if you saw her today, you wouldn't know that she was run over by a car. We're like cockroaches, right? She's 67, and she recovered miraculously. She's still a wackadoodle, but she is physically okay. I mean, we're all like that. I overdosed 3 times out there, and I'm still here and alive. So so my brother's still using. He's 2 years my senior, so he's 68 years old. And he was clean for 2.5 years since he's 13, and he's still alive. Nothing short of a miracle. And he doesn't want to come back. His ego won't allow him to come back. But anyway, so that was the first message I got. So then, I'm dating this guy. I'm 17, he's 19. It's 1970. We leave a bar in College Park. A jewelry store window gets broken. We help ourselves. It didn't seem like robbery to me, but in hindsight, it was. And an off-duty cop at a hamburger place took out his gun, shot into the crowd, and he hit my boyfriend right in the middle of his back and paralyzed him for the rest of his life. Now, mind you, he's paraplegic for life. He's 19, I'm 17. And do you think we would stop shooting dope? No. What we did was work everybody for the sympathy of him being in a wheelchair now. And he was this hot, smooth, talking Italian, and everybody loved him, and so did I. And we just worked everybody for as many drugs as we could get. And about 3 years into that, I was said one of those really very unauthentic prayers, waiting on the dope man, which you spent your life doing. Or at least I did, and I didn't even know that I was praying, but I just said, there's got to be something better for me. And within a few months, I had dropped out of school. I went and his mom helped me get a GED, and I stopped shooting dope for about 5 years, but I didn't stop anything else, and it wasn't around yet. This was prior to my brother introducing me to it. And then one day I was leaving a party at 6:30 on a Sunday morning at
just stay still for 1 second. Just stay still right there. Don't move.
Was it a bee?
It's a wasp.
It's dead.
Oh, no, it's not. He's pissed, and he's coming after you. No, he's not. He's very dead. Thanks.
I didn't know what to do.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. It's like somebody having a booger and not telling them. Yeah, and if I have one of those, tell me too. So I fast forward 6 years. NA is now in Central Maryland. several people tried to 12-step this guy that I used to love with going to NA meeting. Drunk driver hit me head on, rearranged my face. My face smashed into the front of the car. He crossed the median and hit me head on. I wasn't driving. I was too loaded. My face went into the dashboard where radios had knobs back then, 83, and it was not digital. And I had broke all my teeth, front teeth out, my nose was broken, my jaw was broken, and I started working every dock I could find for scripts. I loved to drink whiskey, no cut, no chase, no cubes, smoke Camel non-filters with two hands, and thought I was a gangster. That's my using story. And and fight. And so I went to him and I said, I was miserable. I'd gotten struck ugly. I was miserable. I was hitting a horrible bottom. And I said, will you take me to cop? Because I was out of loop for a while. And he said, no. Now, this is a guy who loved me. He was a paraplegic. His social life was not hitting on a lot, right? He was paralyzed from the waist down. And at one time, he was this smooth, handsome Italian dancing machine, right? And what any addict in his position, strung out on methadone, would normally say was, yeah, baby, I got you, come on. Instead, what he said was, no, I'll call somebody to take you to one of them NAA or AAA meetings, wherever the fuck they are. And three people showed up to pick me up for a meeting. And one of the guys was someone that I had picked up on New York Avenue in D.C., who had been through a treatment center that was just for men in D.C. I won't say the name because we don't. And I knew that he was hitchhiking because his car broke down, right? But he got in my car and he's doing this and, you know, and the whole itchy, scratchy, dope thing. For you crack addicts, see me after the meeting. I'll explain why your crotch itches when you shoot dope. But and you know something I don't get about crackheads? Why do you smoke carpet fibers and kitty litter? Just pull the fucking carpet out and you can see where it falls. That's what a good dope fiend would do. We wouldn't bother with the carpet. You just rip the shit out, right? But anyway, I digress. So, three people come to pick me up. Oh, that guy called that I picked up on New York Avenue. So he was itching and scratching. I said, you need to call my brother and go to that NA thing. This was when I thought I was doing great, right? And I said, you need to go to that NA thing and call my brother, right? So fast forward a year, I'm sitting home with a broke face. I'm drinking at home. I'm working docs for multiple opioid prescriptions. Not shooting dope, so I'm still okay, right? And he calls me. And he said, Betty, this is Paul. And he said, I want to call you and thank you for helping to save my life. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I'm celebrating a year. And I want you to come. And I was like, oh, no, my brother's going to be there. I am not coming, but call me anytime you need your life saved, right? And I'm dying. I'm fucking dying and killing myself on the installment plan. And that was in May of 1983. And in June of 1983, my friend Michael in the wheelchair called three people to pick me up to take me to my first NA meeting, and Paul was driving the car. And it's like, you just don't know. I was fucked up. I was using. I told him to call my brother in NA who had tried to 12-step me, and they came. He ended up, and he was fucked up and high, and he ended up coming to help me save my life and take me to my first NA meeting. How does that work, right? And they were called by a guy who should have said, come on, baby, I got you. We'll go downtown. We'll cop. I feel so fortunate and so grateful that somebody carried the message. Just lost as we were back there, and we were chipping over ourselves, right? We didn't have any literature. We had the white book. We had AA's literature in our meetings. Everybody was an alcoholic and an addict, and you would have your AA sponsor speak at your anniversary. It was like we were like really tripping over each other, and the blind leading the blind. If you took Advil, is it a relapse? You know, we were like anti-medications. We were talking to you about your marriage and don't get in a relationship for a year, but I'm fucking married. Well, that's what it says, right? That's what we know. I mean, we were really lucky. I'm really lucky I'm still here. So it was kind of the blind leading the blind. But then I found this, there weren't any women with time, none. And I found this old guy who had 26 years of experience, and he didn't want anything from me but for me not to die. And I needed somebody like hardcore in my face, over the top. It's not how I sponsor today, but I needed that because I'm a survivor. I make shit happen, even if it's destructive and the world's gonna fall apart. I make shit happen. And I needed somebody just to put their hand up and say, you're absolutely full of shit. You have no idea how to live, or you wouldn't need to be here, and you've got shit for brains. So thinking on your own is never a good idea. And I said, will you be my sponsor? And so I was like, he gave me his number, and I said, well, don't you want mine? He said, I didn't ask you to be my sponsee because you have anything I want. If you want what I have, you'll call me. You'll meet me at a step meeting only. And he said, and if you want to go for coffee, you're paying. I was like, what? Really? And I did it. And he said, and the last and final thing is you'll get a service position. He said, and I think going to the jail would be a really good one for you. I'd done a lot of overnighters, but I never did any time. And I was like, oh my God. My first meeting in a prison system, jail system, was a cell, a picnic table with two benches and two bunks and 17 people. It was hot. It was tense. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? And you know what? I carried that meeting. I carried an NA meeting for 6 years, almost every week. And eventually they separated the men and the women, which was really good because they were not trying to hear anything I had to say. They were copping a feel and swapping spit and getting a little action, you know, as much as you could in an NA meeting, you know. But when they divided the pods and they separated the men and the women, I was able to bring the first ever hardbound book into a meeting. When we got the basic text and to carry the message. And what I realized is the only difference between me and those women were really tacky flip-flops and horrible jumpsuits. And that the way that they felt about themselves was exactly how I felt about myself. I think that a lot of women, my experience is a lot of women, much like myself, come in broken long before we ever pick up, whether it's through sexual assault, molestation, abuse and neglect. But there's a different fear and survival skill that's built when you're afraid of violence and you're afraid of being raped and you're afraid of being beaten. And it's a different, for me, it requires a different kind of love and a different kind of message. And that is that I don't get to beat you up anymore over your recovery or your shortcomings. I don't come over the top. I don't get in your face. The message that I share is it comes from a place of love and non-judgment, because I think most women by the time they get here have experienced their share of beatings, sexual abuse, and molestation. For me, it was from 8 years old on, from, you know, verbal abuse and being afraid. Many of you guys have never had to experience, you know, that fear of many of you have, I'm sure, but it's a fear that if you've never experienced that someone can overpower you by virtue of their gender and size, it's just different. And so I don't carry the message that way. And I carry two messages. I carry the Narcotics Anonymous message, which comes from our literature, and the steps, and then I carry my experience, strength, and hope with those. One of the messages I carry, it's in our ninth step where we make amends to ourselves. And it says right there, through diet, exercise, and seeking medical attention, we care for our addiction by recovering. We care for our mental neglect by learning something new, maybe even going back to school. And we care for our physical neglect with diet, exercise, and seeking medical attention. And so I try to avail myself when people need help navigating medical systems, or they need help eating healthy. Look, I'd be tied off smoking a Camel, but I was a vegetarian. I'd be all in your grill telling you how bad eating meat was for you, and just like poof poof, you know. But it's been almost 50 years since I ate meat, right? So I'm still, you know, so I want to share what I know about eating healthy and taking good care of yourself and navigating medical systems. And so that's one of the ways that I can carry the message of the ninth step and help people. I also made all the mistakes in the beginning of carrying the message through opinion, you know, early on in recovery. I actually thought that, you know, that I had influence over people who used or stayed clean, and I have none. I don't make that decision. It says we don't, the model newcomer or the chronic relapser. My job is just to honor the third tradition, be at the door, welcome them back, and say, we're glad you're here. That's my job. You know, it talks about the base of goodwill in our pyramid, and our goodwill is our attraction, and making sure that people know that they're welcome here, and they're not judged, and that, one of the things, just as an example, so I notice a real lack of diversity at this convention. And we are in a county that was rife with slavery, if you look on the walls of the college. So I saw four brothers, and I thought, oh, I'm going to go up and introduce myself, because they've got to notice they're pretty much the only people of color here. And so I walked up to them, and I said, hey, I have a question for you. I said, and I introduced myself, and I said, have you ever been to this convention? And they said, no. Our friend Jimmy C. told us about it. And I said, well, let me ask you, what would you suggest for outreach to communities of color to get them here participating? Because every cent from this convention goes to buy basic text for people in prisons. And we all know that prisons are heavily populated with people of color. So our message is that even in prison, you can get clean, right? We're going to pipe them in tonight. So how do we make sure that we're really carrying the message in its diversity? And so I said, what would you suggest? And I said, do you think people of color will come and stay in dorms on bunk beds? They're like, yeah, well, I don't know about all that. Conventions are in hotels. And then I explained to them what the intent of this convention is. And they're like, really? I said, yeah. How many of you have been in prison? All four raised their hand. And I said, let me get you on the mailing list for this, so that when the notice comes out for where it's going to be next year, that you're included. And then you can take the information to your groups and make sure it gets shared, so that people coming out of prisons, or people that do H&I in prisons, or people know that every penny from this convention, every proceed, goes to buy basic texts for prisons. And they're like, cool, right? And so that was an opportunity that God just presented to me, because the God in me speaks to the God in you, and the God in you speaks to the God in me. And it just was on my spirit to say, to notice these men and say, hey. And so it turns out one of them is Pauline, my dear friend Pauline, is celebrating 39 years, and I'm celebrating 38, July 12th. And it turns out one of the guys is celebrating his clean date for 6 years is July 12th. I said, you've got to come and pick up a key tag at my home group. It's still in Maryland. And he was just so freaking excited. I said, you are going to be so welcome there. And so these guys are going to show up at our home group, and one of my sponsees is celebrating 33 years. And we're going to, you know, it's like, that's just that hope, that infectious hope is what I live for in this program. Like, being with people on the verge of hope is one of the most spiritual experiences I've ever had in my life. And knowing that there is hope for a new way of life, and knowing that you know, I mean, I've talked to women in prison systems who are willing to take ass whippings and be beat to a pulp to get the money they needed to get one more. It's like, that just hurts my soul, that's the cost of using. And there are so many, but being willing to get your teeth kicked in to get one more, it just hurts my heart. And so I know there's many, many ways to carry the message. For me, I'm GSR from my home group. I'm not a big committee person because I spent my whole life in those kind of meetings and my career. And I sponsor a number of women. And, you know, and I have learned to just share my experience, strength, and hope, and to send people to places where other people have experiences I don't have. I don't have kids. You know, I don't have kids. And so I'm really just grateful. And my sponsor lives in Arizona. I kept that old guy for about 2.5 years. And then I moved on. And my sponsor lives in Arizona. And because NA started out west much sooner, she's got, I'm like not the baby in the family, but she's got like 42, 43 years. And my sponsee sisters have a little more than her, like one of them. And so I'm just really, okay, thank you, I acknowledge. I'm just really amazed at how the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, and the God in you seeking to speak to the God in me, allows me to a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I will share with you that I would not be here if it weren't for Narcotics Anonymous. I roll hard. I don't do anything medium, light, low fat. You know, I don't do that. I roll hard. And I think I got another roll in me, but I don't think I have another recovery in me. And I've seen people with 30 years go back out and never make it back. And I don't want to be one of those people, so I stay. I go to meetings all over the world on the virtual platform. I met CJ around, and then we met again in Bangkok, and then we go to the Philippines on Saturday. And I mean, and when things get settled, we're going to do some road trips because I can. I just served my country for 23 years, active duty, retired as a senior officer. Imagine who gets to do that. I had the privilege of being a responder to the World Trade Center. You know, what an honor. Fuck me up. And I got a lot of disability from the VA for it, but at the time, it was such an honor. I just spent my last 2 years of my career active duty in Puerto Rico, helping after Hurricane Maria, helping them rebuild a healthcare system so 3,000 people never die again, and that people don't have to bury their loved ones in a shallow grave in the backyard because they didn't get any help. And I got to work with the Native Americans across the country and do things that people that are white don't get to do, and experience ceremonies and traditions that, you know, are close-held secrets. Who gets to do that? And I would never have been privileged to do that if somebody didn't carry the message to me and teach me that I had to give it away to keep it. So I'm so weepy today. And I don't even have a period anymore, so it can't be PMS. But anyway, thanks for helping me stay clean today. Thanks for asking me to share, and thanks those for being of service.
Thank you, Betty and Danny, for such a great meeting. Can we close with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.